This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Today we have a rebroadcast of our interview with Tom Vance about the history of the Portage Public School District. He is the editor of the book An Oral History of Portage Schools, Cleora Skinner to Pete McFarlane. The interview with Tom Vance originally aired in December. How did this all get started? How did you decide to do this oral history of Portage Schools?
Well, when I was working at Portage Schools as the community relations manager, I was working on my master's in history here at Western in U.S. history with an emphasis on biography. And that was a nice fit with working in Portage Schools history. So I spent the summer of 2004 interviewing 10 former board members and 3 former superintendents. And we thought it'd be a neat idea just to capture that part of the history for future use for students in the future. So those were done, and so I had a collection of 13 interviews, and it was on the website at Portage Schools for a number of years. But without anything to tie them together, they just weren't really serving a purpose, I thought. And so Steve Rossio at the Portage District Library, he's the local historian there, he offered to write an introduction that would put all of these interviews in context. And this was during a time that there's something called the Portage Schools Collection at the Portage District Library. And Steve had been collecting Portage School historical artifacts and documents for a number of years. And during my years at Portage Schools, we were doing even more transferring over documents and artifacts to the Portage District Library. So this project sort of became part of the building up the collection of the Portage Schools Collection at the District Library.
And you did all of the interviews in the book except for the first one, which is with Cleora Skinner. Now, what do we know about this? Because the date is in there, but we actually don't know who interviewed her, right?
Right. We don't know who interviewed her. It was done many years after she was no longer superintendent. But her picture is always hung in the administration building at Portage Schools. And she was the first superintendent, and she was superintendent for 18 years. And in 1922, there were a lot of women who were school teachers, but there were not a lot of women who were district superintendents. And that's back when Portage Schools was actually part of Western Michigan University's Education College. It was an experimental kind of scheme that they were doing. And we knew it was a big deal that Cleora Skinner was superintendent for that long. We haven't figured out how unique that was, if she was one of the few in Michigan or one of the first in the country. We haven't nailed down the bragging rights yet for Cleora Skinner. But we thought it was important to include that interview with her and to put her on the cover of the book, because that's a really neat part of the Portage School history, and I think part of the history of Kalamazoo County, to think that one of the early school districts was run by a woman at that point. And before we get off Cleora Skinner, there's a funny story. When she became superintendent, they had buses back then, and the pictures are pretty interesting of the school buses back then. But the person that was hiring the bus drivers when Cleora Skinner was coming on board as superintendent in the school district was just starting. She was the first superintendent. But the person hiring bus drivers said, "Now you're going to have to work for a woman. Can you do that?" Because all the bus drivers were men. And that's just something that we wouldn't think about today. And that's in her interview.
So how did Portage Schools start? What's sort of the origin story here? I mean, this was a very small operation at this time, right?
Right. There were 5 teachers to begin with when Cleora was, and she also served as the principal of the school, and it was a K-12 all-in-one. Steve Rossio, who wrote a great introduction to this book, he tells the story of Portage Schools before Portage Schools were Portage Schools in 1922. And of course, back then there were one-room schoolhouses spread throughout the county. And then you hear about consolidated districts, which is why we use the term districts with schools. And it went from a collection of one-room schoolhouses. And actually, those were predated to have a really wide lens to this. The first people running schools in this area were the Potawatomi, the tribe. And they taught their children. So they, as Steve Rossio tells in his intro, the first schools in this area were Potawatomi schools. And then the settlers that were coming into this area were making one-room schoolhouses. And then those were consolidated in 1922 in what we know today as Portage Public Schools.
So from 1947 to 2002, Portage only had three superintendents. You have interviews with two of them in this book. Varl Wilkinson and James Rickers were interviewed. You were not able to interview George Conti because he's passed away. But what did that stability, only three people in that top position over a period of more than 50 years, mean for Portage Schools?
I think that went really far in helping Portage Schools establish itself to what it became. That is very unique for superintendents to have that kind of tenure. And you also see that kind of tenure with the board members, not quite 20 years per person, but a lot of the board members have more than a dozen years. Patricia Dolan was the longest serving board member with 21 years. And that's unique. And a lot of the interviews here talk about how lucky Portage was to have that kind of continuity. I think those were the years, the growing years. Varl Wilkinson was here 23 years, and he really grew the district that we know today. And George Conti continued building it. And then Jim Rickers was able to keep it going. And those years reflect a period of growth and then decline and then leveling off a little bit. So there were ups and downs that these three superintendents had to navigate.
But there's some very big moments in Portage and Kalamazoo County history which happen, especially during Varl Wilkinson's time as superintendent, one of which being, of course, that Portage becomes a city, which it had not been at that point. Did that change what the school district, did to serve the community at that point? Or was the school district very much its own entity?
You know, the school district is larger than the city because Portage Schools actually includes parts of Pavilion Township, Texas Township, and a small slice of the city of Kalamazoo is actually included in Portage Public Schools. So the district's always been bigger than the city. Once the city came on board, then that was another governmental player in the area. The schools were really the anchor before the city, and then the city obviously became the primary anchor for people who lived in Portage. I think the relations over the years between the city and the schools has been, there have been some ups and downs with that, which people talk about in these interviews. I think now they're in a really good place. They always weren't so much. One of the big differences I wanted to mention with in Varl Wilkinson's day, in the early days of the Portage schools, unfortunately now the administration and the teachers are seen as at opposite ends of budget issues and pay.
Contract talks.
Back when Varl was the superintendent represented the teachers to the board. So the administration and the teachers were the same entity. And then the superintendent went to bat for the teachers in front of the Board of Education. And we know that's changed now.
It's the administration, the teachers union, they bargain over pay and those sort of things.
Right.
And then it goes to the school board for approval.
Right. So it's interesting, though, that was a big change over the years.
How important is the Upjohn Company when you're talking about the history of Portage Schools?
Well, the growth of Portage Schools was fueled by the growth of Upjohn. You know, when Upjohn used to just be their research and manufacturing were all in the city of Kalamazoo until the 1950s. And when Upjohn came to Portage, to the farm fields of Portage in the 1950s and built what became the largest pharmaceutical manufacturing plant in the world at that point. And then 10 years later followed it with the headquarters. Then, of course, that brought a lot of population. So during Varl Wilkinson's years, the schools were growing, and it got to the point where there were more schools were built, as it turns out, than there were needed. So unfortunately, when George Conti followed Varl, they had to close schools, and that's closing schools is about the most difficult thing you do in a school district other than redistricting. And so, but leadership-wise, a lot of this book is really about, you know, it's a history, but it's also leadership because we've got superintendents and board presidents talking about how they led the district. So an interesting nuance between Varl Wilkinson's 23 years and between when George Conti took over for his 16 years, Ted Velique, who was gracious enough to write a review for the book on the back cover, he served as interim superintendent between Wilkinson and Conti. So there's the leadership lessons in this collection, I think, are really important.
Yeah, those are some interesting passages about having to go to the public and explain to them why you're closing schools, and then turning around not so many years later and asking for a tax increase because you want to build new schools.
Right. And even as recently as 2007 and 2008, when Portage Schools was going after that really huge bond, started off as $150 million and failed and then passed at $119 million. During that campaign, and I was there for that, we got pushback from citizens who remembered the schools that were closed. So citizens and taxpayers have long memories that can haunt future plans for a school district.
Is part of the lesson there that that Portage grew awfully quickly and then perhaps hit some roadblocks, and that managing growth in that sort of dynamic can be very difficult to pull off just right?
Well, and to know where the growth is, because at one point there were expectations that there'd be more neighborhoods built over where Upjohn is on the east side of town. And so schools were built along there and neighborhoods didn't develop there. And so those were closed, and then other schools were built on the west side of the district.
You often ask people in these interviews about outside events. You know, you were on the school board during the Vietnam War. And there's some varied responses there. Some people, you know, kind of shine a light on how it might have changed the dynamics in the schools. And other people seem to have kind of a tunnel vision that, you know, I'm on the school board, I'm very focused on the schools, and what's going on outside is not necessarily going to play a role in how we govern schools.
Yeah, I think there are several interviews that talk about how the schools are not in a vacuum, and schools really are reflective of society. And so whether it's issues of student behavior or, you know,
dress code, I think, came
up
a
dress
couple
code,
times.
And of course, there would be racial tension during several decades, and continuing issues with equity. I mean, that's schools are supposed to be. I think Shirley Johnson, in her interview, said, you know, the frustrating thing as a trustee is that you can't, as a board president, is you'll never make everybody happy. And you're trying to make a lot of people happy with a school district. And it's one of the lowest forms, low not mean in priority. It's a form of government that's so close to the people that people can access a school district. They can go to a board meeting. They can make a phone call. Whereas at the state and federal level, it's not that easy. So I think schools can serve as lightning rods for a lot of issues. And even issues that aren't education-based, you know, there's prayer. The prayer in schools was controversial for a long time. Issues that the community owns, but oftentimes if it plays out, and nowadays we have issues like with social media, with bullying, like on social media. Well, that we know that's not a school problem, but if it plays out at school or right after school, and then the school district, in a way, sort of owns that issue.
On the subject of race, there's an interesting passage in there about Portage Schools trying to limit the idea that white families would just come and enroll their students in Portage Schools as a form of white flight. And it was an attempt to try and mitigate that somewhat.
Yeah, there were a few references to that. I think the only thing I can really add to that from what people told me was that the district tried to do the boundaries that would be made for the different neighborhoods, because I know there was a concern throughout the decades, and these interviews illustrate seven decades worth of leadership. There were always efforts made to not have more well-off neighborhoods. I mean, we know there's going to be nicer neighborhoods than other neighborhoods, but one of the equity lenses was to make the boundaries for each individual school a mixed boundary from socioeconomic viewpoint. And when redistricting would have to happen over the years, which was never very popular, it was done as a way to balance, not really from a racial viewpoint, but from really, to make it, when people would move into a school district, they'd often ask what the best schools were. And we would always say, well, they're all the same. They've all got the same highly trained faculty, the same curriculum, the buildings are all maintained. And what people meant was who's going who's populating
which
the school.
Families are going
and
in.
And we would never play that game. We would say, well, it's we've mixed up the neighborhoods that each school serves. In Pete McFarland's interview, he talks about one of the things, and each superintendent had a different agenda items that they tried to focus on. And in addition to trying to address human resource issues with doing lots of evaluations and ensuring that there's high expectations of all the faculty, he knew that there were like three operating systems to the district, elementary, middle school, and high school. And he tried to streamline those so there weren't like three mini school districts within the school district, because parents and students do operate differently at those different levels.
This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Today we are bringing you a rebroadcast of our interview with Tom Vance on the history of the Portage Public School District. He is the editor of the book An Oral History of Portage Schools, Cleora Skinner to Pete McFarland. A version of this interview originally aired in December.
I was thinking of there's a portion of the book, and now I'm blanking on who said it, but that if a family wanted to come in to Portage from another district, that they required them to show that they didn't have, that there was a program in Portage that they didn't have in their district, which again was, as it was explained, was an attempt to say, okay, you're really coming here because you want to study this, not simply because you don't like the racial composition where you're coming from.
Exactly. That was... it was always the idea was, I think, from the school district trying to represent itself as a educational resource, and I can't say it any better than how you just explained it, with making sure that people wanted to live in the district for to move into the district for the right reasons.
Now, two of these superintendents who are interviewed, you were actually working at the Portage Public Schools while they were there, James Rickers and Pete McFarland.
Right.
Both of them talked quite a bit about the International Baccalaureate Program. Explain what that is and why it was such an important thing for Portage.
Yeah, I think Jim Rickers says in his interview that I think that was the defining moment during his 17 years as superintendent. And the IB program, for folks who haven't heard about it, is a... it's a curriculum, basically, that any high school can have, but Portage Schools was the first district in the state of Michigan to have IB. There was a private school on the east side of the state that had it, and there were a collection of school districts that put one together as a consolidated IB, but Portage Schools was the first individual school district in the state to have International Baccalaureate, and that was starting in the 1980s. It's almost like college-level classes. That it's different from advanced placement, from AP, though, and it requires students to write an essay, and there's a lot of reflective practice as part of it. So for Portage, IB became a real bragging right, and since then, IB has become much more routine. But that was an important thing for Portage to do, I think, to distinguish the district from other more established districts in the area.
Are there other people out there who would have the story of Portage Schools, and could another volume be written, not necessarily by you, but by somebody, another volume of oral history be put together?
I'm sure, you know, I just focused on board presidents, and there were trustees that served many years. You don't have to be a board president to really own a body of knowledge like that. So I think if there was a student or a historian out there that was looking for a project, there's people that served at high levels, people like Ted Velik, who wasn't a superintendent, but it was an interim superintendent.
An interim, yeah.
And there were board members that served a long time, even if they weren't board presidents. And of course, my project stopped in 2004. And I was trying to do this as a historical project, not as current events, which is why I didn't interview in 2004. I didn't interview the board president then, Shirley Johnson or Pete McFarland. I waited until they were no longer in those positions so I could interview them, you know, with some distance, so they would be could look back on their time instead of doing it real time. But there would be plenty of people that have a history of, have an association with Portage Schools, who I think could contribute a lot to this. And the Portage Schools collection at the Portage District Library would be the repository for something like that, even if someone didn't want to do another book.
I'm wondering if there's also a bit of a demarcation here where you do take us at the end of this book up to Pete McFarland, who, you know, he had a 5-year run as superintendent, which is actually slightly above average probably for districts, as James Rickers, I think, says in the book, 3 or 4 is more mm-hmm. like it. And, you know, that's right before the Kalamazoo Promise gets announced, which, of course, you know, introduces another dynamic into this. And then, of course, Portage experiences more turnover in the superintendent's position after that. So, I mean, did you sort of leave this off at a place that where if someone else were to come in, or maybe if you decide that you want to take another stab at it, that there might be a little different story to tell going forward?
Yeah, I think it would be. There would be, I sort of picked the low-hanging fruit here. I mean, what I focus on was the obvious story. And I was asking people questions like, you know, what inspired you to join the board or what brought you here as superintendent and what were the highlights of your years and what were the challenges and what were the trends? And yeah, I think if you looked at the district from 04 to today and going on to the future, I think it would be a little bit of a different story. Steve Rossio in the introduction talks a lot about what oral histories are. And it's not journalism, it's not current events, and it is a way to preserve great firsthand knowledge for future use, really. And so this collection of interviews would be a resource for someone who would want to do something more with it in the future. But I think this captures up through 04. It does capture, I think, what the school district is today was formed during the administrations of Wilkinson through Rickers. So I think we've nailed the basic story.
Do you fear, though, that there might be some history which has been lost because there were people who you didn't get to interview, for instance, George Conte, who's passed away? And now, of course, there have been other people. You did interview Tom Eddy, but he has since passed away. Mm-hmm. And there have been others. You know, in other words, that some of the history is always going to be lost before we really get a chance to sit down with somebody and get it recorded correctly.
Right. Well, and the superintendents that have served since Pete McFarlane, know more than just what their tenures were, because I know once you're a superintendent, you end up being a magnet for a lot of people who have associations with an institution. So I'm sure everyone since Pete has heard many stories that span the same seven decades that I was looking at.
You know, one of the things that Steve Rossio writes in that introduction is that it's important to have a written record, that it's important to have text. In this day and age, of course, we could all take out our phones and shoot video and think that we've got some sort of record. But why do you think it's important that this be written down someplace?
Well, I think it was, you know, for a long time, these transcripts were online at Portage School's website. But I think for something like this, that's just not a very lasting, for high school or college students that want to do a research about our school, the Portage schools, or for other people who just want to get a look at how a single school district was navigating all these decades. I think it's easier to have it in print. I mean, it's, you know, this will be in the high school libraries and the Portage school, the Portage
district library.
Too many, there are two districts here. And hopefully here at Western, we'll make sure that Waldo has a copy of it. So I think more people can access it if it's for research purposes, for the way that people will use this information. I think the printed word goes a long way.
You noted that oral history is really not journalism. It's a firsthand account. Is it important when somebody reads this to remember we are dealing with one person's perspective, one person's memory, and that, you know, it's important to know that they see it that way, but it's also important to recognize that somebody else who was there at the same time and same place might not have the same story.
Right. And I think that's the benefit of having some of the board presidents talking, that their recollections sometimes are a little different than what the superintendents they served with have. So I think as a combination, I think it goes nicely together. I think it is a very individual story. And of course, in this case, people knew that they were telling a story that was going to be very public. So I think people tried to keep it at a general, you know, kind of level.
Is that also kind of why you ask then more sort of open, rather broad questions to let them really let the story come out of them?
That, and also because in many cases, people had been out of that position for a long time. And so I didn't want people to try to have to remember any specifics. It was just really, it's much easier to interview someone who's been away from a position for, in some cases, several decades, to just give us their general highlights and general impressions. And at the end of the day, that's really what you want anyway, if you're trying to, with a long view, with a historic view. I think that's what'll help put the puzzle together when someone's trying to figure out how a school district developed over the years.
Did you actually make recordings of these interviews?
Yes. Yeah, they are recorded. And the recordings are at the Portage District Library. And they're on cassette tapes, except for they're all on cassette tapes, except the one with Shirley Johnson was the first and only one I did with my cell phone. And so we still have to figure out a way to transfer that to a way the library can have it. It'll have to be on a flash drive. But the rest of them are transcribed along with the cassette tapes. And it basically took a whole summer of, these are all one-hour interviews, and I transcribed them, writing it out by hand, and then I typed them out. And then each interviewee got a chance to look at it to make sure that nothing was wrong. And since it was going to be a matter of record, you know, we got everyone's blessing on the final product. There was one story I wanted to be sure to mention, and Kevin Hollenbeck mentions this in his interview. The position that board members are in is a unique one because people working in the district see the board as an external entity. But the people in the community see the board as an internal. And there were times where people would complain saying, there's no community representation at the school district. And we'd have to say, you elected the board of trustees, I mean, the school board. And the school board represents the community. And Patricia Dolan makes that point, I think, in her interview. You know, first and foremost, the trustees represent the community. But it's really easy for the community to forget that.
Any other little anecdotes or things that stand out to you from having done this book that, you know, maybe just caught your attention when they happened or maybe just stood out to you perhaps when you were transcribing?
Well, there were a couple really interesting stories. When Bob Vanderroost was board chair back during the Wilkinson days, there was an issue about, first of all, there were two things. Back then, the school systems had to start before they got the state budget. And there were a couple of years where the Portage Schools had to go to the Upjohn Company and ask for a $400,000 loan, which Upjohn provided just so the schools could exist, could get along before the state budget would happen. And then also during Bob Vanderroos's time, there was some kind of question about the budget at some point. And of course, Bob Vanderroos was the first dentist in Portage. Old-time Portage people know the name Bob Vanderroos. And there was a question about funding, and someone said, I think you've got hundreds of thousands of dollars buried in your backyard. And this went on for several board meetings. People were starting a petition, and Bob said, you can all go in my backyard and dig it up, but you've got to return it the way you found it. And he pushed back a little bit, and of course, there was no issue at all. One other story was when Phil Sheldon, well, he was a board president, but when he was the only board president who had been a teacher in Portage Schools. And so he had a really unique perspective. When he was a teacher, though, under George Conte, there was a millage that had failed just by a couple hundred votes. And Conte found out that, like, a lot of teachers didn't vote.
Right. He couldn't know how they voted, but he did know if, in fact,
right,
they had cast a ballot. Right.
So Conte pulled all the faculty together and got them in a room and said, I don't know how someone voted, but I know that most of you did not vote. And if just half of you had voted, this millage would have passed. So he sort of really got everyone's attention with that. And after that, the faculty were voting at a much higher level. But all these interviews are filled with things like that are just little interesting stories that you wouldn't think about.
Tom Vance, as always, thank you for your time.
Thanks, Gordon.
Tom Vance is the editor of An Oral History of Portage Schools, Cleora Skinner to Pete McFarlane. The interview with Tom Vance originally aired in December. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.